This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 29th, 2009, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I can't stop yawning.
Did you get your fill of all eight games last night?
Man, I gotta tell you.
Eight enough for you?
You know, it's like my stack was going up, and it was exactly like I thought it was going to be. All day I was dreading playing it, because I knew there was going to be like 500 people playing in this thing. It was going to be a limit tournament. And at 1:08 in the morning, I'm still alive, and there's still like five guys away from the money, and I was just hanging on till no limit hold'em and saying, okay, either I'm going to shove and get called and double up and go to bed, or I'm going to shove, get called, and lose and go to bed. So either way, I was going to bed at 1:08.
So, of course, we're talking about the Apes free roll last night, and because it's a 10-plus-1 event coming up on June 10th, only 14 seats were given away on Wednesday night during the free roll, and we had about, 350 people sign up and probably about 70 people actually playing.
Oh, man, it was ridiculous. You know, and I had people, you know, and every time I have like more than one person sitting out at my table, inevitably someone from the Ante Up Nation will come on and say, hey, Chris, must be really tough having those people sit out on your left. And I'm like, you know what? Actually, it does suck, because in this instance, there was only one other guy at table playing with me. And so he was on my right. So if he would raise and I didn't have a hand, I'd have to fold and give him all that money. And then, so we were just exchanging narrow money, and it was a pittance while everyone else was playing real people and making pots. We were doing nothing. So, I mean, I had a decent stack early on. And then when they finally came back, you know, it was okay, and that's when I started to make my moves and stuff. But it really wasn't that big of a deal having people sit out. It kind of sucked. It was boring, you know?
Yeah, that's the only thing, is it took a while for those stacks to disappear in a limit tournament. Or actually, I guess even a no limit tournament. But it's, you know, six-handed, so, I mean, you're already short-handed to begin with.
But it was deep stack, too, so that made it even remarkable that... You know, a couple of things happened last night. One thing was there was one guy from Brazil in a hand with me, and I had him dead the whole way, and on the river he beat me, and I typed in Bueno Rio. He types in Gracias, and I was like, oh my God, I'm speaking Portuguese. I have no idea if what I typed was right or not, but I was being sarcastic with it, you know, thinking the other guy at my table speaking English would laugh, and the other guy types in Gracias, and I'm like, oh my God.
You know, you risked your future on PokerStars with that, because our free roll is English only at the table.
And I noticed. Is that a new thing? I just noticed last night. Like,
I think
we
noticed that last Apes, I think, it first appeared.
Wow. But. You know, something else happened last night that I was kind of laughing. And, you know how when they put those big blue flashcards up on the screen to let you know about a tournament that's playing in 5 minutes? You know they do that when you're playing in Stars?
Mine are yellow, actually.
Oh, mine's blue.
Yeah. You don't have a cool background like I do.
Or it could be because I have a Mac. I don't know. But one of them came up during the night, and I had to chuckle, because it was like 75 frequent player points satellite into an $11-plus rebuy tournament. And I thought to myself, if you have to play with 75 frequent player points to get into this tournament, why would you get into a tournament that requires you to rebuy? It made no sense to me, and I just had to have a chuckle there. I just thought someone wasn't thinking right there, you know. I mean, all right, I got in for free, but now I'm going to spend $45 on rebuys. You know, it made no sense.
Well, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how our $1 rebuy Apes event does in the free roll.
Yeah.
Might be very similar.
Oh, my God, that's going to be hilarious. So, anyway, that free roll is for the June 10th Anti-Up Intercontinental Poker Series event. It's going to be the 8-game, and it's 9 o'clock again Eastern Time. But I finished 19th, so I was, I don't know, I was kind of frustrated. It was one of those hands where I had a guy on my left who was really, really, really aggressive, and he was actually a chip leader for a while. His name was like Fabio or something. And the blinds were like 18 and 3,600 or something. It was really high. And I had suffered a really bad hand earlier and was just skating by hoping no one would hold him. And he raised on the button, and it was only four-handed at my table. And I looked down at A6 of spades, and I just thought, you know what, I'm not going to fold this hand. I'm either going to shove or I'm going to fold, and I'm not folding this hand against this guy because he could have a range of who knows what. So I went all in, and he called instantly, and he had pocket threes. So the flop came like jack-jack-five or jack-five-five, something like that. So it was over his pair, so I'm thinking, okay, any six, any ace, any jack. And then a turn was a queen. And I was like, all right, any six, any ace, any jack, any queen. I'm like, come on! And then it was like a nine or something, and I got knocked out. But I really didn't regret it. You know, I mean, what I did regret was actually playing. I mean, it was just unbelievable how long it lasted. And you were doing really well early on and then kind of stayed there for a while and then faded. What happened with you?
Yeah, well, you know, when the blinds got big, it's always my big Achilles heel in these tournaments now. So I got to adjust when those blinds get big at the end of the tournament. And
yeah.
Can't play my normal game. I got to... going to be a little more selective. So, but I'll be excited for the June 10th event. Again, that's 10 plus 1, so a little bigger buy-in this time. But it's worth it because you get 8 games.
Yeah.
It really should be 80 plus 8 because you get 8 games. So it's a bargain if you think of it that way.
I really did. I did well in Deuce of 7, which shocked me. I made most of my money in No Limit Hold'em, Pot Limit Hold'em, and Deuce of 7. All the games that weren't horse games, yeah. I ended up making all my money in, which is kind of weird. So I had this one hand last night I want to talk about. Do you think we have time for that, Scott, or what?
Yeah, sure.
So I had this guy come to my table, and I was a chip leader at my table until he got there. And I just felt like he was really loose and really aggressive. And it was like the second hand that we were at the table with him, and he was on my left. And I had pocket tens, and everyone at this point, it was already everyone had to ante, and the blinds were 30-60, so... I had a pretty big stack, and the guy on my left was really the only guy. He just got moved there, and I made it 360 to go because there was a decent amount of money in the pot, and I really thought that with tens I needed to protect my hand a little bit from this guy. But sure enough, he's the only one who calls me. And the flop comes ace of hearts, king of diamonds, three of diamonds.
Diamond.
So now I'm like, all right, two overs, two to a Broadway, two to a wheel... two to a flush. What do you do with pocket tens? You know, so of course I go out and bet, but I bet like 250 and the pot was 930. So obviously it looks like either one, it's a weak bet that he, if he had anything, I figured he would probably come over the top of me, or, you know, he would fold because he would think it was either a weak bet or just someone who's dying to get called with like top two. So what does he do? He calls me. So now I'm like, I have no idea where I am in this hand right now, but I have a feeling that he's floating me. So the turn was a jack of diamonds. So, of course, now it puts up, you know, the flush, yeah. The Broadway, three overs. So, again, I bet just a little bit. I bet 360, and he calls. So now the pot's like 2,100, and the five of spades come. So what would you do?
I would have folded on the flop.
Oh, my God. Well, I checked to him, hoping to check it down and see what he had, and then he bets like 540. So
I hate that. You're sucked in now.
So
that's
I'm like,
pot.
But you know what? I called instantly because
yeah, well,
I just
you have to.
First of all, yeah, the amount of money that's out there, I'm getting 4-1 of my money. Two, it just felt like he was floating and looking for a spot to steal from me, and when I didn't let him, when I didn't check him, let him take control of the pot the first two times, that he was forced to make a bet in the end when he knew he was beat. So I called, and he turned over 10-9 offsuit. I was like, yes, yes. And I like typed in something like, so transparent.
But I think that guy was at my table too. There was a lot of play like that.
Yeah, it just felt like everyone was trying to float and steal in these free rolls, and I'd had enough, and I felt like, oh my god, I can actually call a bluff better online than I can in person, which is really weird. But I don't know. I guess I probably played that hand wrong all the way, but I just had a feeling this guy was going to try to bluff me no matter what.
Hey, as long as you got the chips, you did right.
Yeah, of course, didn't do me any good because I went out near the bubble. So,
well, speaking of a lot of play, the World Series has begun. Quite a bit of play out there, 57 tournaments. And the reason we're on Skype today is our guest is Mike the Mouth Mattisau. He's hanging out in our virtual green room right now.
Yes, yes.
And so we'll talk to him a little bit later, but he's getting ready to light the World Series on fire. But, you know, I ran across an interesting article this week, Chris, from a guy named Gary Trask at Casino City Times. And, you know, all of us want to go out to the World Series and make it big in the tournament. But, you know, another way of making it big is to bet on the World Series.
Yeah. Yep.
And so Gary here, you took a look at the early lines on Bodog, and of course all these lines that we're talking about probably have changed since then. But he did a little analysis, and he picked six bets using an imaginary $1,000 bankroll. And I got to tell you, I think he's going to do all right, but I'm sure we might disagree with him on a couple.
Wow. Wow, imaginary. How exciting is that?
Well, you know.
No, I know. I know what it's like to work for you know, a publication where you can't do stuff like that. So
it's tough to get that petty cash, you know.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll run through these probably pretty quickly, but some of them are going to be fun to talk about. The first one that he is putting his money on is, will a player win two or more bracelets in this year's World Series, Chris?
Well, that seems to be the case, the trend, so I would have to say yes, I guess.
Nine straight years. Would you believe that?
Nine straight
years. Somebody has won multiple bracelets at the World Series.
Wow.
But get this, the odds favor the no.
Yeah, I mean, you know what it is? It sounds like the person who did those odds is the person who walks up to a roulette wheel and sees 25 blacks in a row. And so he has to think black is coming out. So he puts all his money on black, then red comes out inevitably. So
I guess that person. So it's plus 130 yes and minus 180 for no. So he's putting his money on the yes, and I think that's a good play.
Yeah, I think that's probably good. I mean, man, 9 years in a row. There's always one, you know. And I think our good friend Sam Minatello said this once too. He said he's seen it so many times that, you know, it's just some person just gets in the zone really hot and
there's
really nothing you can do about it. It doesn't really have to play that well. They just know what it takes to win. And so I agree with that. I think yes too.
Exactly. All right, number two. Will Phil Hellmuth win his 12th bracelet this year?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting one because obviously no one's had more success at the World Series than Phil. And I didn't know this, but you know, apparently he's sewn 11 into his hats.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of remind everybody that no one has more bracelets than him.
Yeah.
But the odds are it's plus 300 on the yes. So, you know, you might want to take that bet, and I think that's what Gary's doing is because it's a nice payoff.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's going to happen. I think, you know, he may shoot his wad or whatever you want to say on the champions.
I'm not allowed to say that at home. Wife doesn't like that thing.
On the champions thing. I think he may do well in that and win that thing, which is not a bracelet. So,
interesting. We'll have a couple questions about that pretty soon.
Yeah.
Next question real quick. Which poker author will win the most money during the WSOP? The favorite is good old Phil Hellmuth at 5-2.
That's a good guess right there. I don't think that's going to be right either, though. I think... you know, I don't know. That's a good guess. Maybe Barry Greenstein's too, but I don't know. I don't know if I think that's right.
Well, that's what Gary went with was the bear, and his reasoning was, one, Barry's 5-1 on it, so you a bigger payoff there. But he says Barry plays a lot of events, which he does, and also, more importantly, he's a threat to win every one he enters.
Yeah, whereas Helmuth is really just a hold'em.
Yeah, exactly. Helmuth is really just a hold'em specialist, so...
And right. The other thing, too, is that there aren't really – you know how they say those who can't do teach? You know what I mean? There aren't a lot of poker authors who really do that well in the World Series other than these two guys. So I guess I'm going to go with Barry on this one, even though Hellmuth has more caches than anybody in the world.
Yeah, and money is so subjective, too.
Yeah.
You know, you run deep in the main event, then you blow everybody out of this in the money.
Yeah.
So. All right, number four. This is an interesting one. We talked about this at our home game this week. How many of the living eligible World Series of Poker main event champions that have been invited to play in the Champions Invitational will participate?
Oh, man. I'm going
and
with...
It's an over-under 18.5.
Yeah, I think there's 24 that are alive, I think. So I'm going with
Yeah,
the
I think
over.
There's actually there's 25 eligible after 25. You eliminate the people that have won two, okay. You know, like those Johnny Chans.
How dare he.
And the dead guys that obviously are probably not going to show up.
I'm going with the over.
You know, here's the weird thing is they actually Gary did a good analysis on it, and the word is all but six of these 25 have already confirmed.
Wow.
So 25 minus 6. Hold on, let me get the calculator. Yeah, looks like that's 19.
Yeah.
That's over. And yeah. One of the not yet to confirm, as of Gary's writing, was Chris Jesus Ferguson. And you know, unless he gets hit by a bus, I got to think he's playing on this thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I got his phone number. If you want, I'll call him up. And we'll lay a bet down with some ante up money if you want.
So that's an easy bet on the over, we think. All right, moving on. And in the same event, which of the former main event champions will win this event? And you might be a little shocked at the favorite.
Who is it?
I certainly was. The favorite is Peter Eastgate at 3-1.
Yeah.
Now
no
I'm not
way.
Denying that he might be a good call for the favorite, but 3-1 against this field?
No way.
Outrageous odds, I think.
No way. God, there's just no way. I mean, that to me it seems like maybe a Huck Seed or a Chris Ferguson is going to win this thing, not Eastgate, or even like I said before, Hellmuth.
Well, you know, and I spent a little time yesterday trying to figure out whether you can eliminate some of these. Because one of the interesting things is some of the players that people don't expect to show up are actually
right.
on the board here, of course.
Right.
So, you know, you got some odds that are swaying you on that. But I really couldn't come up with you know, what I was hoping to do is kind of eliminate some of the favorites, eliminate some of the people that aren't going to show up, and then try to figure out a good betting strategy on the ones in the middle. Because the interesting thing is there's only two people that have odds of better than 10-1, and that's Peter and Hellmuth at 9-1.
Yeah.
After that, the next group is all about 11.5 to 12-1.
Yeah.
And that's a good group of people: Hashem, Raymer, Moneymakers at 15, Ferguson's 15-1, Carlos Mortensen. But you know, to be able to spread out enough money there, you're not going to get a good return on your investment, I don't think.
Well, one person you can easily eliminate, I think, is Russ Hamilton. Because even though he shows up, I think someone will kill him and he won't finish the tournament. So,
but 65-1, that'd be a nice payoff if you can avoid the bullet.
Yeah, I would love to see our guest Mike Matisau talking to Russ Hamilton during this event and see what happens. I bet you Hamilton does not finish.
All right, but anyhow, Gary's going to put a little money on Greg Raymer at 23-2, and he's also going to put a little money on Tom McAvoy at 19-1 because McAvoy has gone on record by saying he is taking dead aim at this event, Chris.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't think anybody else is going to be taking this anywhere near as seriously as he is.
He's taking dead aim at it because it's the only
dead
one
dead aim.
It's the only one that'll have a chance to win because there's only 25 guys in it.
It's like a you know a two table sit and go.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
All right, and then the final one and is which celebrity will last longer in the Antiope for Africa tournament on July 2nd?
Wow.
Talk about throwing darts at a dartboard, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, everyone's going to say probably Don Cheadle because he's always in the damn heads-up thing for free.
Yeah, well, you know, it's his event, too, and he was the early-line favorite at 7-1.
Yeah.
But you know, I think this is interesting because Gary thought that this is a good bet to make because you can eliminate the people that have no chance. And he got it down to three people that he thought had a decent chance. And that was Cheadle, Montel Williams, who plays a lot of poker, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And Casey Affleck. Now, I know Ben is big in poker. I didn't realize Casey was a rounder.
I did not know that.
Hmm.
I'm going to go on the record and pick Herschel Walker because he has multiple personalities.
Oh, come on, Herschel's nice.
And I'm hoping that maybe that one of them is a poker player and might outlast these guys. So I'm going to go with Herschel Walker, increase my odds. So from 9-1, he goes to 3-1.
See, I'm going to go with Sarah Silverman just because it's going to be fun to keep her in the tournament and watch her in and laugh at her. She's at 9-1. But the other thing, too, is, you know, I think I like how Gary analyzed all this, but I think he was a little flawed on this one because he tried to eliminate people that didn't have any chance. This is an accelerated structure. It's supposed to be over in 5 hours.
Yeah.
You know, you could put a you could put that that monkey that tried to get in the World Series a couple years ago in this thing, and he would still have a chance. All right, real quick, one more thing on the World Series. The Poker Hall of Fame voting is beginning online, and everybody out there in the world can go to worldseriesofpoker.com, nominate somebody, and even write a little essay if you want.
Wow.
And
I think that's cool. I don't think I'm going to write an essay like what I did over summer vacation, you know. But that's pretty cool, opening up to the people. I don't think that really the people should get a vote, but I think it's cool anyway.
Well, you know? The cool thing is they're letting people have a say, but, you know, this isn't like Major League Baseball where, you know, you pick the guy that's been on the DL all year because, you know,
he's a career player.
The way it's going to work is the top 10 nominated people will be recommended to the Hall of Fame committee who can add or delete names. And then in the fall, all the 16 Hall of Fame members will actually do the vote. So it's a way for us all to have a little influence, but at the same time, not make it a popularity contest like high school.
It's kind of like Obama's page where you tell him what you want him to – What's important to you, you know? So we were number 11 with poker, so hopefully we'll have some more influence on the Hall of Fame as well. So, you know, last night after I got ousted from this marathon of a Brazilian-flavored tournament, I went to bed, but I can't just go right to sleep because my mind is racing all the electrical, you know, shocks and everything in there. So I turned the TV on, and you know how when, people join groups of familiar or similar personality so that they can all sort of commiserate together about things, you know?
Uh-huh.
Last night I turned on TV and I was like, what the hell is this? And it was a show on FSN and it was one of those best damn countdowns.
But
but it was 20 of them instead of 50 because it was Bad Beats, Bluffs, and Blunders. It was a poker one.
Oh, excellent. Very good.
And that sounded like my whole night. Bad Beats, Bluffs, and Blunders.
So I was going to say, I wondered if you made the list.
Yeah, exactly. But what it was is now that, you know, FSN has the WPT rights, they are showing, like, all of the, you know, clips from the past and stuff. And it was a pretty good show. I mean, as far as if you like watching guys get sucked out on or making mistakes, some of the blunders that I had totally forgotten about were just so bad. People showing their hands by accident with still a streak to come. And, hell, oh, man, it was hosted by that Chris Rose guy and had sex. Sexton was on with Vince Van Patten, and anyway, I just want to know if you can guess what the number one bad beat was.
Stu Unger winning that tournament after the Coke-filled nose.
That would be a blunder, my friend. That would be a blunder.
Oh, okay, all right, yeah. No, actually, I don't know.
Remember when Joe Hashem was part of that whole "I'm going to sue the WPT" crap, but then ultimately didn't sue the WPT and actually played in the WPT event and won it. Well, he got some guy to commit all of his chips with ace-queen when he had pocket queens. And the guy flops an ace, and Joe is just...
Of course.
Yeah. Now, I mean, on top of it, there's only one queen left. And then on the river, he hits his queen, and he just freaks out and then goes on and wins the tournament. So I just thought that was like... I mean, that was a bad beat, but... There were a lot more bad beats on that show that I thought were way worse. And I just wonder how they come up with the voting for this. How do they decide who sits down and decides what's worse? Do you think Sexton sat down with these guys and went through the list with them? Or do you think they just did it on their own?
I would imagine it's probably just people trying to remember off the top of their head. I mean, you got so many of them. It's such a subjective list either. It's not like, you know, they're sending this list to the Smithsonian or anything either. So, you know, whatever they have good clips of probably makes it. I think that's what they do with all that stuff, right? You know,
yeah, I think the clips...
It's not like a database of the best times the center fielder dorked into the wall or something. You know, it's just...
You just think that someone would sit down with them and say, okay, here's the 20 that you picked out. That's fine. We like them. We like the reactions. We like whatever it is, but... Really, on a scale of, you know, I mean, I can recall, you know, Helmuth's hand against Hoyt Corkins, where Hoyt was bluffing on the flop when Helmuth had top pair, and he came runner sevens to win the hand for him. Runner seven was like 314-1 for that to happen. That was way bad beat than a one-outer on the river, you know what I mean?
Batter beat.
Did I say batter?
No.
Oh,
I
okay. I was going to say. But anyway, it's just weird. I wonder how they decide on, like, why would that one be the number one that Hashem, you know, it was a weird, ambiguous list, but, I enjoyed it.
Of course.
And it made me feel better, too, about last night. Because if those guys make those mistakes, you know, going all in with A6 suited, you know, is not bad. So, all right, well, let's turn to our Ante Up news desk.
The G4 network will launch the TV show 2 months, $2 million in August. The Variety reports 4 online players will live in a Las Vegas mansion and, using their own money, try to accumulate more by competing against anonymous players on the internet.
Does that sound really boring to you?
I was going to say, I'm hoping that the Variety report left out the best parts of this, because, wow. I mean, I know they do a lot of, like, video game shows on G4, and so maybe people just like watching TV on TV.
Man.
But I don't know.
Next.
We'll see. Woodbridge, New Jersey police say a shotgun-wielding masked bandit crashed a poker tournament in a central New Jersey American Legion Hall, escaping with more than $2,400, according to Philly.com.
Is it legal to have those tournaments?
That's a good question.
Because if it's not, then the cops are like, I ain't going to go find this guy. You guys weren't supposed to be playing with this money anyway.
Oh, very good point. But you know what really pisses me off about this? What really gives me the red ass, Chris, is here's the thing. I'm hypersensitive about veterans anyhow, because I have never once considered putting my life on the line for my country. So I have a tremendous amount of respect for all those men and women who have.
Right.
And I think our country needs to do a lot more to help veterans and support them and thank them. And at the very least, Chris, I think we can agree that you don't need to rob veterans.
Yeah.
I mean, can we agree on that, please?
Yeah.
There's got to be some other kind of like degenerate illegal poker game that's more worthy of being robbed than the two guys that stormed the beach of Normandy. Gosh.
Yeah, that is pretty sad.
Oh, it just makes me sick.
It's like taking a sandwich away from a starving child in a homeless shelter.
Yeah. What also makes me sick is continuing to talk about Annie Duke, but I'm going to do it. Here's the final item in the news desk this week. Annie Duke held a charity tournament this week called Sucking Out on the Rivers. Pause for laughter.
Oh, my God.
Where more than 20 Joan Rivers impersonators were among the players, each with a bounty on their heads. Of course, this all benefited Refugee International, Annie Duke's charity on Celebrity Apprentice. And I went to her website this morning to try to find out some details on it, and the website just takes forever to load. So,
well, you know,
that's as far as the news desk is going to take you on this story.
Good for her, again, taking the high road, though. And it really is a disgusting title, but... I'm happy that they're raising more money for that cause. So,
absolutely, I mean, it's fun that they're making they're able to make fun and make good out of that whole thing.
All right, so let's move on to our mailbag.
Yeah, we're switching up the order a little bit here, but
yeah, we're allowed to do that. You know, we're allowed not to stay stagnant.
Yeah, you want to be unpredictable. You got to shift gears, right? Yeah,
absolutely. So this letter comes from Mike Gurley. You want to read it? You want me to read it?
I don't care.
All right, well, he says, why push all-in preflop when you're short-stacked when you can make just a raise and then push all-in on the flop? He said, in No Limit Hold'em tournaments, he said, I've been thinking about a way to play when you get a little short-stacked. Let's say that you've had a hand that you would like to push all-in with, like 9-9 or 10-10, but afraid that if you're called, your opponent may suck out. You have something in the neighborhood of 10 to 15 big blinds left. His thinking is that if you raise 3 or 4X... and get, let's say, one caller. If the flop is dry, you push all in. If the villain has something like ace-king or a smaller pair, they may fold. Whereas if you went all in pre-flop and they called with ace-king, you would be giving them 2 extra cards to beat you, and I'm trying to take those two extra cards away. Is this a sound strategy, and what kinds of stacks relative to the blinds would it work with? If you've got, say, 6 big blinds and put in 3 pre-flop, you can't push anyone out for 3 more post-flop. If you've got 20 big blinds, you're probably not risking an all-in anyway. Maybe 10 big blinds? Put 3 in pre-flop, then shove 7, giving them roughly 2-to-1 odds. So what do you think? What do you think his thinking is?
It was my understanding that today's show would not involve math. That was a lot of numbers. But no, you know, this is kind of my little... wussy way of playing No Limit Hold'em that I've been kind of having. And actually, it's probably why my I'm developing this reputation of a short stack specialist who eventually gets swatted out before the bubble. But yeah, I kind of like this. I don't like, you know, pushing all in if I don't have to. But I think he's right. It all depends on these chip stacks. And he's right. You know, six, you know, you're going to be ridiculous. You got to get it all in pre-flop with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and well, in 20, obviously, it's a totally different story. But 10 sounds about right. And, you know, but again, it all depends on the players. But I like the fact that he's trying to take away those last two cards. I think that's true. If that flop comes and it's weird, you either get somebody to lay down or you can also retreat.
Well, I just got two things
to say
about it.
Depending on how close you are to the bubble.
Yeah, I got two things to say about it. One, it's maybe I have more than two things. But the first thing, though, is that it's not really a new idea. It's just called a stop-and-go, which everyone does at some point in their career or at some point in a tournament. It's the stop-and-go play where, you know, if it's a uncoordinated flop, and I think even, matter of fact, remember that book I had reviewed, Winning Poker Tournaments, One Hand at a Time? You remember that? When I reviewed that?
Yeah,
well, that Pearl Jammer guy, John Turner, I think he even mentions it in one of his hands and how he does it. It's not really a new play, but it's... And the other thing, too, is people always say, a lot of the pros and their books and everything else, is if you get down to 8 to 10 big blinds, you really want to think about a hand to shove with because you want to do some damage with them and still make them think twice about calling. So I would think 20 big blinds is way too much, and if you've gone under 10, you've waited too long. But the other thing that I don't like about the stop and go is that you can change your mind. The flop may make you change your mind. Let's say you do have those nines, and it comes out Jack Queen 5. Now, you know, a guy could easily be calling with Ace Jack, Ace Queen, Jack 10, King Queen, King Jack.
Right.
So and you're going to get scared to push it all in. Whereas the other way, there's still the putting the onus on them to call when you shove rather than letting them hit their hand first. So, you know, I think there's reason to do both. So I don't think any of these are hard fast rules, and I can't stick to this rule, you know, as forever. I mean, it would have to be all situational. So as we always say, it depends.
We're always very helpful on these. Well, Chris, the swag wheel has not turned up yet.
Man.
But, you know, I did go to Publix yesterday, and there is a picture of it on the side of every milk carton.
My dad has a ninja suit. I could dress up like a ninja and go out at night and try to find it if you want.
You know, I posted on Craigslist. I haven't found it there yet, but, you know, obviously I know where they get the best hookers in Clearwater now. So, you know, we'll keep looking. We got an APB out. We got, a good detective on this thing, and hopefully we'll recover the swag wheel, because I know every one of our listeners just is mortified that the swag wheel is not spinning on the show anymore.
So,
and we want to rectify the situation as quickly as possible.
Do you want to do like Rochambeau? Do you want to pick a card? Do you want me to close my eyes and point at something?
You know, that's like saying, you know, asking out a lady at your wife's funeral. You know, I'm just, I'm still mourning the loss of the swag wheel. So let's just wear black a little longer. Obviously, we know, I looked at the swag shelf and it's kind of like, you know, denting down under the weight of two particular prizes. So let's just give Mike a set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com and maybe take a moment of silence for the swag wheel.
All right. Oh, the hotline! The hotline rang and broke the silence.
No respect. Just no respect.
You know, you'd think that someone would wait to call before our moment of silence is up. But hey, now this is an interesting hotline because it plays right into our next segment, 1 Minute Mystery. So
maybe we should switch the hotline and the mailbag around to make that work.
It
sounds almost like we planned this.
Oh, my God. Well, let's hear it. It comes from Ted. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, fellas. This is Ted Guerrero. I was calling to respond on the 1 Minute Mystery debate, I guess you could say. I think you should break it down on the week that you also play the solution. In between, since you replay the mystery, break it down in between there. It gives folks a week to ponder it, and then we also get Columbo's take on it as well. That's just my 2 cents. Thanks for the podcast. Later.
Well, Ted, you seem to be in the majority. Pretty sure that everyone that we looked on the forum when we asked the question on our forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum said, what would you guys like us to do? And there were, part one, play it, let it go, let everyone else talk about it, and then when part two comes up, then we'll give it some detailed discussion and talk about what everyone else had said, and then play part two and see what the final thing is. So, gee, that sounds awful familiar to me. I don't know, but isn't that already what we do with this thing?
I thought so too, but maybe it's just that we're just not doing enough analysis on it. You know, because at the end of the week, I love just kind of messing with you and throwing out, well, what if you were to raise with 7-3 off, Sue, huh?
Yeah.
And then you just laugh at me and tell me I'm stupid. Which I am. So maybe we just need to do more of that. So, today's part one, and so we'll just be silent. But next week we'll beat this little case into the ground.
All right. Well, now again, I'm confused. How are we going to give away a gift to this guy?
Well, again, let's see. I mean, on the ground. All right. I still got a big ass box of these card protectors from PokerFaces.tv. So hey. Ted, that's what you're going to get. Sorry, you know, if we had the wheel, you might have won something more exciting, like a World Series main event buy-in.
And that's the thing, is that we're limited to your site now rather than random chance. So really, whatever comes into vision for you is what they're going to get, and that's pretty sad.
Yeah, it's going to be really sad next week when we're back in the great studios over at WDAE because, you know, we don't own any of that stuff.
Yeah, I know it.
So whatever we give them, we're stealing.
We're going to go to jail.
Probably just going to be like, you know, a big ballpoint pen or something real exciting like that. But hopefully, the swag will come back next week. But Ted, send us your address. We'll get that card protector from PokerFaces.tv out to you. And everyone else, anticipation of better swag to come, call us at 813-448-1120 or send your comments, questions, hand of the week to podcast@andyupmagazine.com.
You're getting pretty good at that, man.
I'm trying.
You should take you like 6 or 7 takes.
Greetings. This is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another 1 Minute Mystery. The Case of the Still Dancing Tens. It's much later in the same multi-table tournament, but it's deja vu all over again for us. We have 12.5K now, and the blinds are 300-600 with a 75 ante. Despite the increase in chips, we are one of the shorter stacks at our table, and our M is 10. Right out of the gate, the end of the gun raises to 1,800 now.
Sorry to disturb you.
Folds around us in the cutoff, and we look down once again at 10-10. This time it's in the cutoff. And this, combined with it being later in the tournament, gets me thinking. Call, raise, or fold? Folding is too weak of a play for this stage. We haven't even reached the money yet, and if I raise and get re-raised, 10-10 is going into the muck here. So I decide to call and hope that the button and the blinds depart.
I don't think we are trying to steal anything here.
The button and blinds do fold, and the pot is 4,800 when we see a flop of 2 of clubs, 8 of diamonds, 4 of diamonds. We do not have the 10 of diamonds. The end of the gun fires out a bet of 3,000 into the pot. Now I ask you, what's different this time, and what do you do?
And that's not all. Buy today and we'll set you completely free.
Ever thought that some offers are just too good to be true?
Yes, that's an incredible 42-piece set for only $19.95. Yes, you heard us.
That you don't generally get something for nothing?
Free! Free! Free!
Well, at PokerStars, you actually do. Because the minute you sign up as a real money player, you automatically join our VIP club and start earning player points towards hundreds of items, from plasmas to Porsches to seats at major poker tournaments. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to see why our rewards program makes other offers seem, well, a lot of hot air. PokerStars VIP Club. The best online poker reward program.
You know, Scott, it's such an odd situation we're in today because, you know, when you have someone like Mike the Mouth Matuso on your show, you have all sorts of things that you want to ask him, you know, but in the end, really, the answer to anything that you want to ask him, it can be found in his new autobiography. It's almost as if the book wipes the slate clean and you have to begin from there. So Mike, thanks for joining the Ante Up Nation today. Congrats on the book.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. Appreciate you guys having me on.
You know, when I first heard the title, Check Raising the Devil, I wasn't sure if it was your autobiography or maybe you were like in a heads-up match with Gus Hansen.
Yeah, well, that was the second thought. That, you know, I would probably have been check raising the devil too.
I know you had a couple of people who pretty much helped you put it together as far as writing for Cordoza Publishing, right. Amy Calistri and Tim Lavalle. You know, I've often wondered what is that process like. Can you give us like how you worked with them to get it finished?
Basically, I'm not, you know, since I've never written anything before, and since I lost like half my motor skills from all the stupid drugs and stuff that I did, I'm not very good at writing. So basically, they just helped me translate my autobiography into writing, and they wrote it, kept writing up, and they wrote it up into my words, and I thought they did a fantastic job.
Yeah, I think they sure did. Now, Mike, it's not like you're hurting for money anymore, so you didn't need to tell everyone your deepest, darkest secrets. So why'd you write it?
I wrote it to more than anything to help the younger generation of poker players that have a lot of money and just basically throw it all away partying and aren't really aware of what's going on in the world, and just more to help people more than anything.
Well, one of the things about the book that really makes it work for me is just how candid you are. Your personality really comes through. I really felt like you and I were just sitting together and you were telling me all these stories. How difficult was it for you to open up and let everyone inside to see those skeletons in your closet?
Well, it was pretty easy for me because I wanted it to be out there. I was sick of hearing about, Mike's a drug dealer or Mike's this or Mike's that, you know, when I wanted people out there to know the real me. So I just really, really needed to set the record straight about, you know, what happened with my life and how I had to do 6 months in jail for pretty much nothing. And I just got sick of hearing on ESPN or whatever, Mike was in trouble. Mike got in trouble for selling drugs or, you know, and it really would always bother me or Mike's a bad person or Mike's this or Mike, you know, I wanted people to know who the real me is because I just hated being the person that I'm not, you know, I hated being portrayed as somebody I wasn't. So, you know, I really wanted people to read that the book and really know what type of person I am.
Well, I think when they read it, they definitely will appreciate, you know, everything you went through and now they'll understand the reasons behind what they now call your infamous blow-ups or whatever on TV.
But, right.
So that must have been really important to you. Like, even the conversation with Raymer at the World Series, now you get to really explain what was going on there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Everybody gets to understand that I really wanted that to people to know that you know, it was done in jest and fun, and the cameras came over, and I was just having fun with it, and of course, I didn't think that he was going to ever win the World Series. And if he never did win the World Series, it would have never even been shown, probably. But it would have been just something funny. And and that was, believe it or not, you know, like in the book I write, that was one of the worst things that I ever said or did, you know, where I was just having a lot of fun. And it came out, you know, in a situation where you know, it still sounded funny and everything, but it brought me across as a bad person, and I didn't want that.
Well, Mike, you said you wrote this book to kind of help people kind of avoid some of the problems that you've had or deal with the problems that you've had. Can you tell our listeners, give them some signs for bipolar disorder and attention deficit hyperactive disorder so they might be able to avoid self-medicating themselves?
Right. Well, the main thing is you know, when you're sitting there and you're winning every day in poker, yet you're going home and you're crying and you're upset, there's a good chance there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And when you're going, when you are running around and talking a million miles an hour to people and you're acting like a little child and you don't know why, you know, there's a good chance there's something wrong with you. And you know, that was my personality, was always like that. And when I'm not on, when I don't have medicine to help me with this, I mean, I literally, you know, I'm just like I guess I'm always going to be a little kid inside my body, but it won't be coming out so much in public like it used to. So, and that was with my ADHD did that. So, you know, I'm really a changed person because of it.
Well, I know when I read the whole book, and I know Helmuth is right when he says that, you know, you won't be able to put the book down. I mean, I literally read it in like one sitting. And two people in this book had a huge influence on your life, or at least changed your life. And I think you changed their names to protect them. But it was Jeannie and Mike. They got you hooked on ecstasy. But, and this is one of my favorite moments of the book. Not before you walked around the entire Voodoo Lounge and asked everyone what they thought of X before you would take it.
Right.
You know, and then years later you had another couple, Sam and Andrea, who pretty much forced you to take some coke because you were so depressed around them. And I guess right. My question is, with friends like the four of them, who needs enemies?
Yeah, well, the first two were two good friends of mine that really wanted me to stop being depressed, and it worked. And the second ones are two of my really, really good friends who were sick of me complaining about what came into town. Again, all their names were changed, but they were in town to visit me, and they were staying the weekend at my house, and they were sick of hearing about how depressed I am and how much I hated life and how much I wanted to kill myself. So the reason why they wanted me to do some lines of coke was to stop being depressed. So it was and it worked too. So they were just more, believe it or not, both of them were all looking out for my best interest, so that's really what happened there.
Do they regret it now when you talk to them now?
The first two, I have no regrets for, because, you know, ecstasy was a lot of fun for me. It was a lot of fun while I did it. You know, the second two, you know, they don't even party at all anymore, and they just wanted me to not be depressed, you know. Yeah. And they were in town, and, you know, how'd you like to come visit somebody in town for the weekend, and your entire weekend all you hear about is how depressed your friend that you're staying with is, and how he doesn't want to go out. He's laying he's crawled up in a ball in the corner, and he just doesn't want to do anything. So they're just trying to get me to get out of the shell that I'm in. So, you know.
Well, it's not hard to recognize, but the parallels between you and Stu Unger are remarkable. I mean, a brilliant card player, sports betting junkie, anti-drugs at first in your life, then pretty much drug dependent. But obviously, yeah. Where you guys differ, you know, is you kicked the drug habit and lived to tell about it. Once you realized you were on that destructive path that he pretty much had laid out for you, and you were almost literally visited by his ghost one night in the book, how come that wasn't enough to scare you straight? What had to happen?
Well, what really basically had to happen is I needed to really come back from Paris and realize that it was one thing to be up for like 5 of the 7 days that I was in Paris. It was another thing to come back and then go party with a stripper for 2 more days and don't sleep and realize that I had been up for 7 out of 9 days. And once I realized I had 2 days sleep in 9 days and was more dependent on doing meth than anything else, that's when I knew that I had a problem, and I just said I just didn't want to do it no more. And every time I came down and quit doing it, I just decided I would get super depressed, and so I just went to a psychologist and said I don't want to be depressed no more. I know somebody help me, you know, and that was it. And I just listened to what he had to say to get me off of what I needed to get off of, and I stayed strong and listened to everything he had to say, and that was basically what got me off of it.
Well, that's great, Mike. Really, it's good to hear that you're able to work it out that way. We have been speaking of some of your enemies, though, and there's a guy in this book named Mike Vento. Mm-hmm. Only that's not his real name, and no, right. It's not the former poker room manager at the Orleans.
Actually, that was the name he gave me.
Right.
Okay.
So we left his name the same.
Okay. But without giving away too much, tell us a little bit about this guy and what he did to you.
Well, he just pretended to be like right when at the end after I got – the funny thing was is he met me the last party that I did that we partied. I had actually pretty much quit doing drugs. Party that we partied, and then I went and saw then I went to Paris and came back, and then I quit. So he met me right at the very end of my drug party, and he just pretended to be my best friend, and you know, and wanted me to take him out. He kept wanting me to go out, and I kept saying, "Dude, I don't want to go out. I quit doing this shit," you know, and then my, you know, I don't want to give too much of the book away,
right,
but you know, it's just basically the story about how my doctor, who his name was Dr. Keon Cave, hooked this guy up into my book, and into my life and had me go and buy him shit so he can get out of a problem he was in with probably selling prescriptions or something. Who the fuck knows? And so that's basically how he got into my life.
Well, and there's a lot of irony tied to this guy. We won't give it away. You know, let everybody who reads the book find out. But I'm just curious about, you know, if we didn't live like in a society where you would go back to jail, what would you do to this guy if he came across your path again?
Oh, well, you know, I don't – the truth of the matter is I don't hold nothing against him. He was doing his job. I hold a lot against the doctor that my doctor, who is no longer allowed in the Bellagio or allowed in around anybody else, because he's the one that knew he was an undercover cop who put him in my life for no reason.
Wow.
So that's the guy I hold a lot of the grudge against. And I'm a very forgiving person. If he was to tell me one day why he did it, I might even forgive him, because I would really like to know why you would want to put an undercover cop into somebody's life who's so innocent and doesn't have anything to do with anything. So, without giving too much of the book away, that's pretty much, you know, what I would think.
Well, one thing they can look forward to, I know, is the courthouse scene. And I'm not going to explain what happens, but it's really one of the most shocking and at the same time sad things I've ever read.
It was pretty amazing to me, to be honest with you. Out of all the things that happened to me in that book and things in the past, definitely the most shocking things that happened to me was the preliminary hearing where you read about there. That was like such a shocking thing to me that I still couldn't believe him tapping me on the knee and then saying he's going to go fix things and come about and doing what he did. So it was pretty amazing.
So you went to prison for 6 months. How scared were you that you might not come out of there alive? Did you ever worry about that?
Well, I was really, when I went in, I was really worried, you know, in a way of which I believe that they were out to really make it rough on me. There was another thing behind me. They were in there to protect me. It was really weird. It was like, okay, we're going to make it rough on Mike, but we're going to make sure that nothing happens to him too at the same time. So, I believe that the lawyer that I have, you know, is the best lawyer in the country. And I believe that he made sure that, you know, nothing happened to me in there. But another way, I also sometimes believe that the cops wanted to make it miserable for me because, you know, I really never did anything and I got so much shit it was ridiculous.
Well, I don't want to mislead the readers either. There is a lot of poker in the book, and I think the poker scenes in the book are really captivating. And not just for the poker itself, but really the demons that you were fighting through most of them and the ups and downs you experienced as a result of the disorders and the street drugs.
Yeah.
But one of the best for me was the Omaha High Low bracelet. When you determined,
that's why it'll always be considered to me the greatest poker accomplishment of my life. Now people, when they read the book, they'll really understand, you know, what I went through. And the thing is the two people that knew what I was going through the day of that tournament, and one was Billy Gazes, and the other one was my best friend Matt Lefkowitz. Other than that, nobody else knew what I was going through, and it was like, I can't even, it's still to this day undescribable, the pain I was going through as I was trying to make it to that final table that day. You know, I was just screaming from the inside out, you know?
Do you think that Negreanu sort of now, like, it feels bad about the way he was nagging on you at the table like that, knowing what you were going through?
I talked to Daniel yesterday, and he's not read the book yet, and I told him there's a big chapter in there, you know, with us. On the O2 Omaha tournament, and so he hasn't read it yet. But when he does, you know, I think he's going to realize things that he didn't really believe that, you know, he just really won't believe that was happening to me. I mean, on the day of the final table, I was fine. You know, I was 100%. But the day before the final table was the day that you get to read about that I was just like in absolute agony. I mean, to the day I die, probably the most agonizing day of my entire life that I was awake, you know, and trying to fight through that to get to the championship and to win something that you want more than anything was so brutal. And that's there's no other way to describe it as the biggest poker accomplishment of my life. Even if I was to win the main event tomorrow, it can never stop. I've tried so many ways to top winning that tournament, and I've never gotten nothing. When I won that tournament, the emotional high that I got when I won that tournament was bigger than any other street drug, any other high that I'd ever gotten in my life. It was like I was on in another. It was almost like an out of body experience the second I won that tournament.
Wow!
And I always remember that experience like to the day I die.
Well, you know, as an Omaha player, Mike, I'm really happy that was your bracelet and your big moment. And but you know, we told our listeners that you were going to be on the show. Some of us sent some questions, and we have time for just one. Comes from a listener named Jay Herkey. And he wants to know what you think about drug testing in poker, and if it would be fair for everyone to take ADHD medications for concentration.
Well, that's the thing, you know. I have a lot of friends that have done that take Adderall like me, and they can't. Their focus is not. They don't have the focus. If you don't have ADHD, if you take Adderall more than 3 days. You will have really bad side effects from it if you don't have ADHD. Okay. And I give you an idea. I you know, not to mention any names, but I gave somebody some recently because they wanted to try and help focus. And the first day they played great, and the second day they were like all speedy and all whacked out. So you know, it's a catch-22 there. So. These medications, these hard medications, are meant for people that have ADHD, not for people just to try and help with their poker game.
So you're saying basically that people who have ADHD, when they take these medications, you're brought up to a level that normal people who don't have it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
And the people that don't and try and use it for them, it will work as more of an enhancer than the first couple days. But then after that, it reverses on them, and they will have really bad side effects and not be able to play worth a shit. So,
all right, well, we brought up the series before with your Omaha bracelet win, and of course it starts this week. So how many events are you planning on entering, and how do you feel?
I feel great, except for the fact I woke up with a sore throat today, but hopefully it's only because I don't know why, because now I'm talking to you and my throat don't hurt.
Okay.
So hopefully... Hopefully it was just something of being thirsty or whatever, because I could only imagine me now waking up and being sick for the next couple days. Because if I am, I might kill somebody with the 40,000 starting in 2 days. But I don't know. I mean, I went to bed at 1 o'clock last night and just woke up when you guys called. So that's a long wait. That's a long sleep for me. And so hopefully I'll be all right.
Now, you mentioned the 40,000 and obviously the main event. What other events are you looking forward to this year?
I'm looking forward to the Omaha 10K Championship, and I'm looking forward to the 50K course and the 10K mixed game. Those are all games that I want to win.
Can you tell our listeners where they can pick up your book and pretty much how much it costs?
Yeah, my book is for sale on Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com online. It goes for $24.95. It'll also be available at the World Series of Poker in the Cardoso Publishing book, in which my girlfriend and my mom will be there selling them. I'll be giving autographed copies for 30 minutes a day, 4 days a week, to anybody who wants to buy them. That's going to be at the World Series. And if not, afterwards, after the World Series, I'll be making some book tours and going around signing autographed copies too. So basically, you know, we've just started the promotion on the book. It's really been so far so good. I mean, they're just great reviews, like from you guys. Thank you very much. And from everybody else that have read it. I mean, I'm yet to hear somebody that just hasn't thought the book is amazing. And I put 2 hours worth of work, two years worth of work, 2 years worth of work into the book. So hopefully, you know, like I said, I didn't write the book. For for money. I wrote the book to help people out, and if I can help anybody out, one person out, it's going to be more than worth it to me.
Well, normally at this point of the show, we get a hand of the week from one of our listeners or from one of our home games or something and break it down. But if you had something that you want to talk about, we could always do that instead.
Well, I mean, on the mouthpiece this week, I talked about a hand of the week in which I was playing Pot Limit Omaha, and the person raised on the button, and I re-raised with the ace, queen, 10-4, double-suited spades and clubs. I was sitting about 3,800 deep. The flop come 4-4-10. I bet 750 into the pot, and the guy moved me all in, and I called, and his hand was the 6-8-8 king. And the flop come 4-4-10. Of course, I flopped the full house, and an 8 came on the river, and that was my hand of the week. For all you guys out there that think that you run bad, I just had a guy put in like $4,000 with an absolute complete zero. And
do you see that often?
I see that all the time.
Does it surprise you?
No, I mean, I'm playing stud last night. I limp stud eight or better. It was in the mixed game horse game, and the stud eight or better comes around, and it was a pretty big game, and I limp with a queen, and I have split queens with a 10. You know, I don't like to raise big pairs in stud eight or better because there, you know, it depends how, you know, the baby raises and the next baby re raises. I just get out. I don't get involved. So, but all the babies folded, and it was me and the bring in with a 7, and there was plenty of babies up, so I kind of liked it. The fact that now that the babies are pretty dead, and I have a queen, so I hit a ten of diamonds. I hit, so I have like queen nine, queen queen nine, 10 with the 9-10 queen of diamonds, and he hits a 4, and I bet, and he raises, and I re-raise him. And I like the fact that there was 2 sixes and a 3 on the board, so I don't like his chances of making a straight. And he calls, and now he hits a 10, and I hit a 8, and so my board is queen 10 8. Then I hit a 9, and so my board is queen 10 9 8. So I've got queens and nines, and a 4 to a straight, and his board is like the 7, the 4 to start, and then a 10, and then a jack. And then a king. So, or actually, his board is 4-7-10 jack, or 4-7-10 king. So, anyhow, the river he checks, I just check because I figure when he went to war on 4, he's got like an up and down straight draw, like a 5-6. So, I check it, and his hand was split sevens, and he hit a 7 on the end and made 3 sevens to beat me.
Oh, my God.
And he took four bets on 4 and then called all the way down with the board 8-9-10 queen. With like one pair of sevens, no draw. I mean, I'm probably going to be rolled up in that spot eight out of 10 times. And even if not, I mean, he was going to war with me with split sevens.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
So I found that kind of, I had to email that hand to my friend just to make him laugh a little bit. I see those hands. I see people play like that all the time, but that's why I've been crushing the online games lately. So.
Now, do you think that some people, when they see a board like you had there, he was actually more bluffing than he was?
Well, he thought I had diamonds because I hit the queen 10 of diamonds, so he thought I had 4 diamonds in my hand. But even if I did have queen 10 of diamonds and 2 baby diamonds in the hole, I mean, you don't want to be going to war with one pair of sevens, no draw. I mean, especially when you brick on 5th Street. And then I hit a 9, you know. I could have anything.
Now, well, you know, the last time the general public has seen you, you were on the World Series last year with that positive attitude. And,
right.
And now, obviously, when you're online, it could be a whole different ball game. How much did the ultimate bet debacle, which I think you were probably hurt the most out of any of them, how long did that go on for you to feel that negative online, and do you still have remnants of those feelings?
Well, the thing is for me is it destroyed my poker game. I was when I lost all the money in 2006 and see nobody, you know, if you look back, there was all kinds of articles written that said Mike Matisseau wins millions online, loses millions playing online poker. Well, Mike Matisseau won millions playing live and tournament and lost and got cheated out of millions online. So, you know, that's basically what it is, you know.
All right, Mike. Well, we won't keep you any longer. We appreciate you being on the show. Just real quick, our next listener tournament is an 8-game mixed, and a lot of our listeners are learning deuce to seven triple draw low ball for the first time. Any quick tips for them on what they should look in?
Just look for the people that are, you know, you just always play, when you're playing deuce to seven triple draw, you know, you just always try and draw to a 3 to a 7. You know, that's the bottom line.
All right, Mike, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it, and we really enjoy the book.
You got it. Take care.
All right, take it easy.
This is Joe Seabock, and you're listening to Any Up.
Well, that was a great, great, great interview. I've always respected him. I always thought he was going to be a good guest. I'm glad we finally got him on. And I think he would have been a great guest had we got him on just to talk about poker. But certainly his life, I mean.
Yeah.
You want to take a life to pick apart. You know, if anybody out on the poker circuit now, that's probably the guy you want to know about. So and it's great that he's just so open with it now.
You know, I'm sure a lot of people knew what he was going through already, so it wasn't that hard. And now that he's balanced and everything, I think that it made it easier on him. And boy, he was so mellow. It was so weird. I was so, you always envisioned the interview with Mike Mattisau to just be like this huge gunned up thing and end up being, you know, so mellow. But that was cool.
We all learn not to wake up our guests anymore, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's just never going to happen while we live in Florida.
We seem to have a trend of that and killing World Poker Tour hosts.
All right, well, we hope you enjoyed the hand of the week with him. It was a little unorthodox, but we thought we might want to just give him a little soapbox to talk about some stuff.
Yeah. Shifting gears, that's what we do here.
Yeah, we shift gears. And, of course, it spurred a whole bunch of other conversations, too, in there. So that was cool, too. We got some more out of him. But don't forget, if you guys do have a hand of the week you want to send us, send it to podcast@anyupmagazine.com. Another good show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we will see you at the tables.
Any Up is a production of AnyUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnyUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnyUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Give me 2 seconds. I'm going to go run and just wash my face and wake up here, okay?
You got it. No problem.
How many guests have we woken up in our career?
About 20. Everyone on the West Coast. All right. Mike Mattisau pissing. There's one for the Easter eggs.
Oh, man.